Okay, well, thanks for coming today, you guys, and we're going to get some fabulous information about financial aid and honestly get a couple of perspectives. We have a representative from the financial aid office and also the counseling center, because we've had a lot of students come to us in commuter services and express a need to know, you know, financial times are hard and it's stressing me out and what can I do and that sort of thing. So hopefully we can get some answers to those questions, and you all, I mean, the point is for you to be able to ask the questions that you have as well. So think about that, and there we go.
All right. I'm Janine Gant. I'm Associate Director of Financial Aid. I've been here at TWU for going on 23 years. I have recently been promoted into my current position, so I have a lot of challenges ahead of me. But I want to give you just some basic information to start out with about financial aid. If you all have applied, you know the basic programs that are out there. But the building block for financial aid, of course, is completing the FAFSA, the Free Federal Application. And that's what drives all of our financial aid programs. Scholarships are not impacted normally by the FAFSA. There are a few scholarships that are need-based scholarships where we look at that information, but the majority of scholarships that go through TWU, we don't look at the FAFSA at all for the scholarship information. Once you've completed the FAFSA, we also have a school certification form. It's called the Certification Information Form that we ask you to complete, and it allows us to know whether you're coming in the summer, a little bit about the number of hours you're going to take, so we can set a more individualized budget rather than just a standard budget for you. We have standard budget figures, but say you're a student who's going to take 18 hours in the fall and the spring, and then you're going to carry 12 hours in the summer. That's going to be more hours than just our standard budget would reflect. So it allows us to increase the cost of your budget, which allows you to be eligible for more financial aid. The programs that we offer are the Pell Grant Program, which is one that's been around for a long time. It's the basis that we start from. Then we have institutional grant funds, the Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant, Texas Public Education Grant. There's a couple of new grant programs, the Academic Competitiveness Grant, which is for students who completed the recommended programs in high school. We use that for freshmen and sophomore students who are in some of the science programs, technology, foreign languages, when they get to their junior and senior years, also might qualify for a SMART grant. And I don't remember what the SMART stands for, but it's science and mathematics and something like that. The federal government has come out with another grant program for education majors, the TEACH grant, where students can receive up to $4,000 a year if they're in high need fields. They have to be working on a degree in a high need field, and they have to agree once they graduate from school to teach for at least 4 years in that high need field in a low income school. If the student doesn't meet the requirements that that grant program has, it becomes an unsubsidized Stafford loan with interest accruing from the time the program was taken out. So there's quite a few different nuances to that program. The College of Professional Education actually is the department that certifies whether you're in an eligible program or not. Once we receive all the documentation, we take the information you've told us on how you're going to attend, whether you're going to be on campus, off campus, the number of hours that you indicated you were going to attend, and then we look at the FAFSA information to see what the federal processor is telling us that you should be able to contribute to your education based on your family circumstances and your income, and we subtract that figure from your cost of attendance to get what we call financial need. If you had a cost of $10,000 and said maybe you had a 2,000 EFC, then you'd have, let's say 10,000 or 2,000, so you'd have $8,000 in need. We could award, this is where we look at scholarships that you've received, because it counts in as part of your financial need. So we would look at the scholarships you've been awarded, then we would award you Pell Grant if you were eligible for Pell Grant, then possibly any of the other grants that I've mentioned. And once we had awarded you the programs that you had qualified for, for financial need. If you'd indicated you were interested in working on campus and you preferred college work study to student loans, then we'd award work study, and then last of all, we would come in with the student loans. So what we try to do when we're awarding students is give them what would be most advantageous to them, and then go down the order trying to use loans as the last resort. So that's the basic philosophy that we use in awarding. Now, say that you've received all your financial aid for the year and then something unusual happens. Maybe if you were a dependent student, one of your parents lost their job and you're going to need additional money. You can come back to us, bring us the documentation that shows my parent was laid off at this point. And for the current year, the year of 2009, my parents are not going to earn the same amount of money that they earned in 2008. When we start awarding for 2009-2010, we're looking at your income, if you're a dependent student, from you and your parents. If you're an independent student, we'd be just looking at your income in 2009. But if you had a major change in your financial situation for this upcoming year, we could look at the current year to see if there's any adjustments that we could make in your financial aid. If you've already been awarded up to 100% of your cost of attendance, you're not going to be eligible to receive any more money. The only thing that would happen then is it might change the type of money that you receive. Maybe you weren't eligible for a Pell Grant to start out with. But now, when we look at the new circumstances and look at the new income, it may be now that you qualify for a Pell Grant. What we would do in that event is we would have to go in and reduce one of your student loans if you had student loans, and then change that amount of money into a grant, which is advantageous to you because then you don't have to pay this money back. But if you've already been awarded up to that 100% cost of attendance with all the various programs, then you won't be eligible to receive any more money. If you had unusual circumstances, say you were living on campus and you moved off campus and your rent was going to be a whole lot more off campus than what you were paying on campus, then we could take a look at that and determine whether you might be eligible to receive more money and increase your budget. If you were living on campus, maybe your room and board for the year was $6,000. Well, now that you've moved off campus, your rent alone for the year is $8,000. We would come in and increase your budget by that additional $2,000. Generally, when we do those increases, the only thing that you're going to be eligible for is probably going to be additional student loans, but at least it gives you the opportunity to receive more money. Maybe you had your car broke down, you're commuting, and you have to pay $800 to get the transmission replaced, and you don't have that money. You can bring that documentation into us showing, usually we like to see that it's been paid, but if that's not possible for you, if you bring in a statement from a repair shop that shows that this is going to cost you this much, again, we can go back in and increase your budget by that amount, and generally it's awarding additional student loans to help you out in that situation. Some things that you would want to consider, I know with the times being what they are, there are some students that are having to leave school. They just absolutely cannot afford to stay in school. If you have to withdraw from school during a semester, if you withdraw before you've completed 60% of the semester, you're going to have to pay back part of the financial aid you've received. So that's something to consider if that applies to you. If you can remain even in one credit hour for the balance of that semester, you wouldn't have to pay any money back. Say we're past the official census date, the official enrollment date for the semester, and maybe you got sick and you know there's no way you're going to be able to complete the 15 credit hours you're in, but you think you might be able to complete one class. If you still stay enrolled in that one class through the semester, you won't have to pay back any of the financial aid that you previously received. So those are some things that you want to consider. If you do have to withdraw completely before that 60% point in the semester, and in the spring, it's usually around the 1st of April. It's generally a few days for the last day to withdraw, and I think we should receive a passing grade. If you withdraw after that point, then you don't have to pay anything back. Now, what does happen is generally you would be placed on financial aid probation. If you have a documented reason, medical or some other than just not doing well in class, some serious reason for withdrawing, we can usually grant you an extra semester probation. What I tell students, if they're going to probation at the end of the semester, we're not going to get too concerned about it because you would still have eligibility for financial aid the following semester that you enrolled. Maybe you didn't come in the summer, but you're going to wait till in the fall. You'd come in on financial aid probation and you'd still be able to receive your financial aid funding. But if something happened in that fall semester where maybe you had to withdraw again, which would place you on financial aid suspension, then we'd go back to looking and see, did you have extenuating circumstances in either one of those semesters that caused you to have to withdraw from school? You know, it could be something, you were working, you lost your job, you don't have enough money to go to school, you're going to have to move back home, something like that. If it's extenuating circumstances, not just not doing well in class, that doesn't cut it. So that may give you some ideas of things that might possibly come up. The main thing is when you go to dropping classes and withdrawing is that if you have financial aid, you have to be real careful about doing that, whatever the reason. And I've had some students that have come to us and say, well, I talked to Student Life and they told me if I withdrew because of medical reasons that I'd be okay, it wouldn't affect anything. Well, it may not impact one area of your schooling, but it can impact your financial aid. It just depends on the circumstances and the timing of the withdrawal. If you enroll full-time at the beginning of the semester and you receive your financial aid, and then before the census date, maybe you drop two of the classes and you get a refund for those classes. Well, after the census date, we're going to go back in and look and see what your official enrollment is. And we may have to reduce some of the programs that you've been awarded because there are several programs that require full-time enrollment so that you could lose the entire program. There are others like the Pell Grant and for this new year, the ACG and SMART grants that have to be prorated based on the number of hours you're enrolled if you're not full-time. If you drop below half-time, below 6 hours before the census date and you've received all your money, there's a good chance we're going to take all of it back. And it's not something that we have a choice in. These are programs from the state. The state provides the money and the federal government. All we're doing is following the regulations that are set up for those programs. And if we don't follow those programs, if we're ever audited and by federal and state auditors and they come in and determine that the university is not following the rules set up by these programs, the university runs the risk of losing all of these programs. So it's a serious matter for us, and I know it's hard for students sometimes to understand that, but those are some of the things that we deal with. Again, if you have to drop below half-time, most of your loans require that you maintain half-time enrollment to keep them in deferment or keep you from having to pay on them, or in some cases with the loans, keep them from accruing interest. Generally, with most of the loan programs, you have a six-month grace period. With the subsidized Stafford loan, Perkins loan, and nursing loan, during that grace period, the loans are not accruing interest. Once you get beyond that six-month period, then they start accruing interest. There are procedures set up that if you're in a situation where you know you're not going to be able to return to school in that 6 months, you're not working, there's no way that you can start making payments on those loans. There's what they call forbearance, where for a period of time, the lender will say, okay, you don't have to make loan payments during this period of time. The interest is still going to accrue on the loan, but for this period, because you have these extenuating circumstances, you won't have to make payments on the loans. Of course, the interest still accrues, and then at the end of that forbearance period, then you have to start making payments on your loans. You always want to make sure that you stay in touch with your lender. Whatever the type of loan is, if you get into any extenuating circumstances, the federal government has set up lots of provisions anymore to help students repay their loans. They have graduated income payments, ways to spread it out over, I think, about 25 years to pay it back. Generally, it's 10 years, but now they are extending that to kind of help students out. The main thing is don't go into default on your loans. Just work with your lenders to keep that from happening. You cannot bankrupt out of student loans. When you go into bankruptcy, they take the loans into bankruptcy, but they don't forgive them. They come out of bankruptcy and you still have to keep paying on the loan. So those are just a few things if you get into extenuating circumstances that might help you out. Do you have some questions for me about the programs or? Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to turn 24 over the summer. Do I still, can I file as independent or do I still need to do dependent?
You would need to have been born before. Let me get my little sheet here. Since I haven't been doing much processing this year, I'm not up to, you'd have to have been born before January 1, 1986. So if you were born in July of 1986, you're still going to be having to use your parents' information to fill out the FAFSA. If you were born in 85, you can fill it out without your parents' information.
Okay?
Sorry.
Sounds like it's some good news, though.
Yeah. I have some questions.
Okay.
When does the financial aid process start? Like, I know after January 1st, you sort of wait for your W-2, and then you can start filing your FAFSA, and then you can, but when does it, like, when can we start applying for, like, institutional scholarships, like, with the financial aid office?
Okay, the deadline for TWU scholarships was March 1st for the 2009-2010. Every year, March 1st is the deadline for scholarships. That's a hard, fast deadline, so if you turn your scholarship application in on the 15th of March, we may look at it, but since I've been here, I don't think we've ever awarded scholarships to students who miss the deadline because we have so many that apply and use up all our money. They qualify for the scholarships and use up all our money that we don't have anything left over to award to those students who apply afterwards. Our other financial aid programs, the grants, the work study, the student loans, March 1st is what we call our priority deadline to have all your forms in for summer. April 1st is the priority deadline if you're only coming fall, spring. We award year-round, no matter when you get all of your forms in, we award. The priority deadlines give you a better chance at the institutional grant funds, which are limited. Pell Grant, the ACG grant, and the SMART grants, if students are eligible, no matter when during the year they apply, we award them. But a couple of the other grant programs, we have limited funds in. Right now, the student loans, all the federal student loans, well, the federal Stafford loans, those we award year-round. Perkins loan for students with exceptional financial need, and then the nursing student loan that's awarded to nursing majors, those two have limited funds in them too, so they come under that priority deadline as well. We started awarding for 2009-2010 around the 1st of March. Right now, we're awarding students who were complete up through the 22nd of March. We have another group. I went out and did a count this morning of close to 1,000 that completed between that March 22nd and April 1st deadline. So those students are the ones that we focus on initially to get them awarded so their money will be here in time for school to start. But anytime during the year, we award.
Okay, so if we applied for the school, like the school scholarship fund, it would have been posted.
The awards are probably, well, they've been awarding scholarships, but they will probably continue awarding scholarships up until about the middle of June. So if you've not heard anything yet, it doesn't mean that you haven't been awarded a scholarship. It just may mean that we haven't gotten to that group. I know that they meet every week and they're working on awarding scholarships. You can check your TWU portal. That's the best place to go to look for any awards. You can also check on the portal for any outstanding forms that we're requesting. That's first place that you'll see what we're needing. Sometimes what happens is students will turn in their FAFSA and they'll turn in their certification form and they'll look on their portal and we're not requesting any more documents. Then maybe 2 weeks later, you see this request go out there for a document. Well, what's happened is we've looked at the information and determined that there's something that we're going to need in addition to those two basic forms. What we try to do is send letters to students, usually within, sometimes it may take 2 to 3 weeks before the letter gets out, notifying you that we need these additional documentation, but the portal would have it first. It'll show up as a request out there.
I had a couple more.
Good questions.
I'm one of those people that's sort of in the middle. They think my parents can contribute enough to where I don't qualify for grants.
Okay.
But at the same time, they don't really make that much because they don't take my dad's credit card debt into account.
Right.
So, like, they can't really sort of pay for, like, everything. So what would you suggest that I pursue, like, just as many scholarships as I can?
Right, yeah. Unfortunately, in your situation, it's going to be scholarships, it sounds like, or student loans. And one of the things that the federal government did do this year that has helped students out, with the subsidized Stafford loan, freshmen can borrow up to freshmen can borrow $3,500 a year, sophomores $4,500, juniors and seniors $5,500, and now in graduates it's $8,500. In the past, dependent students could only get the $3,500. If their parents had a higher income, it might not have been in a subsidized loan, it might have been all unsubsidized. And then independent students could come in and borrow an additional $4,000 to $5,000 a year just from the fact that they're independent. This past year, what the federal government did is come in and allow dependent students then to borrow an additional $2,000 in unsubsidized Stafford loans. So a student who got $3,500 in subsidized loans in the past couldn't get anything else unless their parents were denied a parent loan if the parent applied for a parent loan. But now they can get an additional $2,000 in loans. So that's one thing. And when we award loans, what we'll do is award the student the maximum that they're eligible for up to their cost of attendance. When the student goes out to accept the loans, they can reduce the amount of loans, but we just award up to the cost of attendance. Our student population is one that they need every dollar that they're eligible for to make it through school, because we have so many non-traditional students that we adopted a policy of funding a student 100% of their need, even if it included the maximum in loans. When a student's awarded a loan, they have to accept that loan before that money will ever hit their account, and we send them information telling them where to go to accept the loan and where to do a promissory note so that that loan won't be official until they've done all of that. So the student's not at risk of getting money that they didn't think they ever applied for. That, under the procedures we have now, that won't happen. The only thing would be identity theft, where somebody got your identity and did that. That would be the only thing, but that's another issue. But we use that philosophy because we were finding out before we did that, we were spending a lot of our times revising students' awards because they kept coming back wanting more money. Another option that you might think about, and again, it's student loans, is the college access loan through the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. In some cases, you don't need a cosigner on that loan, but a lot of dependent students use it when their parents then will cosign on that loan. And you have to go to the coordinating board's website to apply for the loan. If you're not funded up to 100% of your cost of attendance, you can go to hhloans.com, and it's the college access loan, and fill it out. They send us the information, and then we'll award that loan. From our website, there's a free scholarship search. You can go out and search for private scholarships. You might want to look in, I don't know where your parents work, if some employers provide scholarships for the students of their employees, service clubs, some churches will give small scholarships to students. It may only be $100 or $200, but it might buy a book. So those are some other options that might be available to you.
And I have a loan for this year, and they haven't sent me my book. Like, how would I go about finding where that loan is? Like, I got it through the Compass Bank, and they sent me a letter saying that they're not going to do any loans this coming, like, anymore.
Right.
They said that my loan won't be affected.
Right.
But they had never sent me my book, because it's one of those that you don't have to make payments until after I graduate, but my dad wanted to start making payments.
Okay, what you would need to do, go ahead and contact Compass Bank and ask them where you can send payments. Once they make that switch, you should get information from the company that takes over servicing of that loan. Now, one thing you will need to do this year if you're awarded student loans, when you go out to accept your loans on the Texas Guaranteed Student Loan Corporation's website, you'll need to choose a new lender. And Compass Bank's lender code should not come up. Now, they're not exiting yet, so it may still come up. At this point, we tried to get them to pull that lender code off of there, so that wouldn't happen. But you will need to choose a new lender, and then you'll need to do a new promissory note with that lender as well. As far as you having to start paying the loan back, that's not affected by that bank changing. Does that help you?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you don't know the contact number for Compass Bank, you can call our office, or you can get in touch with the Texas Guaranteed Student Loan Corporation, and they'll tell you. Also, there's a website, the National Student Loan Data Service, NSLDS, and you can go there, and with your PIN that you use in signing your FAFSA, you can pull up all your loan information. It tells you who your lender is. It should also have contact information for your lender out on that website as well. I don't think I have the address with me on any of the documentation that I brought, but okay. Yeah, you can just, I think you can just go to the FAFSA website, and I think there's a link from the FAFSA website out there. I know there used to be, but I'm not sure if it's still there or not. Okay. Yes, sir.
I used to make a little more money, so I wasn't qualifying for any loans before.
Okay.
I've never had any financial aid or loans.
Okay.
But I just lost my job in January.
Okay.
So I applied for the financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
Based on my information from previous year income, I'm not going to qualify.
Okay. What we'll do, we've got, I have a form here that I can give to you. Now, did you apply for aid for the spring semester or for 2009-2010?
For actually, I'm starting summer.
Okay. And you already completed the FAFSA and sent it in. Okay. What I need you to do is I'll have you take this form and fill it out. And what we're going to do is look at your eligibility based on your income, your expected income for 2009, rather than look at it for 2010. And we just need the information, your termination letter, and then you can attach it to this document and turn it into our office, and we'll make the corrections to your FAFSA and then base your eligibility off of the 2009-2010 income. Now, one thing that does kind of create a problem for students is for this past year, 2008-2009, maybe they lost their job in February of this year and they're needing additional money for the spring semester. What we call our special circumstances won't apply to them, because for this past year we were looking at 2007 income. Well, if we do the special circumstance for them, we'd be looking at 2008 income, and they were employed the full year of 2008. So it wouldn't change unless their income happened to be less in 2008 than what they made in 2009. So for the spring semester, it's a little bit more difficult for some students, because we can't make any adjustments for the current year in those kind of cases. Okay, so does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Janine, I'm going to interrupt just a second. Does anybody have 1 o'clock class? 1 o'clock class that they need to? Okay. That's fine. I just want to make sure that we're watching our time and make sure everybody gets where they need to go. So continue with your questions, and then Denise will get to you in just
that's
a second.
Okay. I have 1 o'clock appointment, but
you
I
do.
Have a few minutes.
Okay. Well, why don't I let you go ahead?
Okay. Well, I mean, really, I was here just to be a buffer in case anything stressful came up talking about these conversations, and I'm sitting here feeling anxious listening to all this, and I'm done with it. So I'm wondering, how are you guys feeling about it? It seems like every time I go to these presentations around financial aid, it's naturally anxiety provoking.
It's really tough, especially being one of those middle people, because they expect you to be able to pay like out of pocket.
Sure.
When my dad already has enough financial troubles as it is.
Yeah.
He can't really contribute. And then my boyfriend is also trying to start school this summer, mm-hmm. and he's never gone through any of these sort of processes. So I'm a freshman, so I just learned about this, and I'm trying to educate him too, because he's trying to do it through a community college, and there's no one at his house that's ever been to college and knows anything. So, and it's definitely hard.
Yeah. Well, I think just in general, trying to figure out how you're going to navigate getting through school financially is stressful, but then you put all of this economic news that we're flooded with every day on top of it, and, you know, that's enough to make any of us anxious. You know, what's coming up for you all when you turn on the TV or you read the paper or you hear about the stock market or, you know, just the energy within your family or your friends around these issues?
I'm kind of happy I'm in school.
Not such a bad place to be, right?
Yeah, and as Annie was, I work in a newspaper staff, as we were talking about, some people are going to school just so they can get those loans so they can keep their house.
Yes, exactly.
And they're paying for everyday expenses, so I would imagine mm-hmm. that people in that situation would be just underwater.
Mm-hmm. How about for anyone else? How are you coping with all this bad news that we're being flooded with?
I'm scared I won't have a job when I get out of college.
Exactly. That's something that I hear from students, is that, you know, they're toward the end of their college career and they're concerned about where am I going to find a job? I've spent 4+ years getting an education, and you're telling me the only thing that's available might be retail if I'm lucky, or you know, something like that.
Right.
So that's certainly a concern that, mm-hmm. that we're hearing.
And I've heard a lot of that over at counseling as well, just a lot of anticipatory anxiety in terms of what's it going to be like when I graduate. You know, it's going to be this great, wonderful celebration, and then sort of a letdown afterwards if I don't have a job and, you know, I can't get a new student loan and all of those kinds of things. You know, I think one of the best things that you can do just in terms of managing stress around all of this is, one, to have a lot of really good information, which is why I think the financial aid office is just so instrumental and somebody you want to get to know and visit with, because they obviously have everything that you need just in terms of planning ahead. What I see a lot of times at the counseling center is that people, you know, have unforeseen circumstances, or they just don't plan ahead, and then before they know it, they're panicking because they can't meet their expenses, they can't buy their books, they can't, you know, live where they need to live to do a particular internship in the summer. I mean, whatever your individual case may be. So I think first and foremost, just in dealing with getting through school, it's really important to have as much information as possible. You know, do your searches, look into things, look into unexpected things that you wouldn't necessarily think about, like any community organizations you've been a part of, parents, companies, those kind of things. Because there is a lot out there, but you've got to be able to be willing to sit down and really dig for it for a while. And then use the network of people that you know already, maybe professors that you have good relationships with, mentors, that kind of thing. So, you know, information is power, so you want to get as much as possible. One of the things that we've been talking to students about at the counseling center is, you know, people just coming in feeling overwhelmed and feeling depressed and just feeling sort of dismal, like, I can't get in my groove because everywhere I look, it's just bad news, and we hear these numbers that it'll be 5 years before things are better, and, you know, the reality of it is, in terms of the economic downturn, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. And I think the reason that that provokes so much depression and a lot of anxiety for people is it's this sense of loss of control and power, which never feels good to us because we like to feel in control, we like to feel like things are predictable, and, you know, I think the most hardy of us emotionally just get anxious when we're dealing with loss of power. So, you know, there's a couple of things just in terms of your overall well-being that applies to what's going on in terms of the recession and in getting through school. In addition to getting the information, you know, take a look in your life where you do feel like you have a sense of control and you have a sense of power. It's really easy to get into this negative thinking right now of everything's dismal, it's always going to be that way, I should have never gone to school. And before you know it, you're catastrophizing and then not going to class and then failing class, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is typically what we see a lot this time of year at the Counseling Center. So, you know, I think it's incredibly important in terms of like getting the information is that you are being proactive right now, not when the semester ends, but you're being proactive figuring out what am I doing this summer, what are my sources of income, and how am I going to save up money so I'm ready in the fall in case things do get worse, in case I don't get what I'm expecting. So always be really proactive about it. I think the other thing too is, you know, monitor your tendency to talk to yourself in a way that's very catastrophizing, very negative, very, you know, the sky is falling and it's never going to get better. Because that can become very insidious, and before you know it, you're sort of living that and you're feeling it, and it's hard to see the things that are going positive. Yeah, you may not have a job lined up yet, but you've got a really good GPA, you've got some really good relationships with professors, and chances are you're going to get some good letters of recommendation. You know, I really encourage people sometimes, like when you're just feeling like it's all yuck, sit down and make a very concrete list of like, these are the things that are working for me, these are the things that are going well, here's the support that I have in my life. People that I can rely on long term if things don't get better, and not even financially, because everybody's going through it, but really who can you rely on emotionally? So trying to do whatever you can to stay in a little bit more of a positive space. I think the other thing is, you know, school is just so stressful, it's overwhelming. This time of the semester is no fun for anybody. You have got to be incorporating a little bit of self-care. And, you know, when I say that to people, they're like, but I don't have any money. Did you hear me? Like, I don't have any, I want to go shopping, I can't do it. And absolutely, you know, people can't do that like they used to. But there are things that you can do that don't cost a lot of money. You know, to go grab a cup of coffee, to take a walk outside where it's really pretty, to go to the wellness center and work out and get those good chemicals flowing. You know, just little things that make you feel a little bit better. To go over to the library and check out a good trashy novel and read that for a half an hour a day versus always focusing on your schoolwork. You know, my point is you really need something to keep you going and to keep you motivated. What happens, like I said, is when people kind of get to the very end and they haven't been proactive, they haven't been managing themselves well, it's at the end of the semester that they tend to decompensate, which is not convenient considering that you have to take finals and get through. So one of the things to do in terms of being proactive, in addition to what I've already said, is just practicing very simple, completely free stress relaxation kinds of things. Do you all do that in any way? I mean, what do you do to unwind, to just relax a little bit?
I'm not going to be the first one.
Clearly, they're not doing enough of it.
If you can't come up with something, we've got a problem. Anything.
I check my email. Like, I just sort of go through and just, like, it's kind of productive, but at the same time, it's really easy to just to, like, reply back to people. Because sometimes I just get so busy, I, like, see it, read it, and list that I need to do it, but I never get back to the person. Mm-hmm. So that sort of makes me relax. It's just doing email, checking Facebook, and just doing stuff that's not important, needs to be done right now, just sort of decompressing.
Right. And I think it's that decompressing thing that's really important. And responding back to people, hopefully you're getting a little bit of emotional connection with other people, because it's really easy to get kind of isolated and detached, particularly if you're in a situation where maybe you're really struggling with these issues and other people are like, look like they're just living high on the hog and things seem to be okay. I mean, that can be kind of difficult. So, you know, just kind of reaching out to people and getting that support. What I have here for you is a handout called Strategies for Coping with Stress, which is something that I think everybody should start day one of the semester and incorporate throughout the semester if I had it my way, but it's usually not how it works. These are just really, really simple things that you can do. And what I think is important to recognize is that not everything on here is going to fit for you. It's very individualized in terms of what feels comfortable for some people and what doesn't. Some people might love doing yoga, where another person might say, no way, I'm going to go for a run. So it's kind of like that on here. You got to look through these and figure out what works for you. But a few of them that I think are really important are really deep, intentional breathing. And, you know, when you're running around all week and you're worrying about getting that studying done for that test, how you're going to pay for things in the summer, you know, where you're going to find your next job, and what's going on in your relationship. Your body is on overload, and it is stressed out and releasing all kinds of chemicals that make you sad and cranky and anxious. And so what deep breathing does is it really trains your body to do something very different. And there are some steps in here to do that. And that seems so simplistic, and people are like, how can that help me? What you're doing is you're literally retraining your body to respond to anxiety-provoking situations, including finances, in a way that doesn't immediately go to like, oh my gosh, now I'm having a panic attack practically. You know, so whenever you feel these stressors coming on, step back, really remove yourself from the situation and do some of these deep breathing techniques and do them on a regular basis. You would be amazed at how helpful that is over a couple of weeks. Because one, it clears your head, because when your head is racing a million miles a minute, you cannot think clearly about what you need to do. And you tend to be impulsive, and then that gets you in trouble down the road. So really practicing some things like that. There are a lot of good suggestions here in terms of using some more positive self-talk, like I talked about, versus the catastrophizing self-talk of, you know, this has all been a big waste of time and it's never going to work out, okay? It feels badly right now. It doesn't mean that it's not going to work out in the long run. So we have to kind of put a more realistic spin on things. Our tendency is to go to the catastrophizing place. So really monitoring for yourself. How do you talk to yourself? And if it's hard for you in the moment to come up with more affirmative statements, then write a list of 5 affirmative statements that you keep with you all the time. Maybe really simple things like, I'm going to get through this. I have a good support system. I have confidence that when this clears up, I'm going to find a job. In the meantime, I can waitress. I mean, not that anything's ideal, but, you know, you're going to survive it is what the bottom line is. And so really, really being in touch with how you talk to yourself. Let me see if there's some other ones that I really like. Taking time out, you know, right now everybody is just really going crazy trying to get through the semester, get ready for finals, all of that goes back to what I was saying. Get on Facebook and veg out for a while, read a trashy magazine, just do something to break up that constant worrying that you might be experiencing. So I'll let you look through this. There's a lot of different things on here. The other thing too is that, you know, if you ever find yourself in a situation where it's just like, it is too much, it is overwhelming, you can't seem to get yourself calmed down, then come on over to the counseling center and we will sit down and we will talk with you. You know, sometimes it almost takes somebody intervening to say, all right, take a deep breath right now. Let's step back and get a more realistic appraisal of this. And that might include us sending you over to financial aid to figure out what's out there that you just haven't researched yet or that you don't know about. Okay? So those are a couple of things. You mentioned earlier something that was going on with your boyfriend. And, you know, I've done a lot of couples therapy, and one of the things that I know people fight about in relationships is
Money,
right? One of the number one things that people fight about. And so I have a really good handout here for you called Marriage and Money. That's just what it's called, but it can be partnerships of any kind, okay? And it's just ways to kind of to talk with your partner and even your parents about, you know, how are we going to work through this so that people are not exploding at one another and the situation just getting worse. Okay, so I know we're limited on time. I won't go through all of this, but I will at least hand it out for you. Okay, questions, thoughts, comments?
Good to know that you have these resources, and I encourage you to take advantage of them. I mean, you know, they're there for you, and it's not something that you should shy away from.
No. Believe me when I say that people use the counseling center. That's what it's there for. There's a waiting list for people to get in. But if you are in any kind of crisis situation, we will see you immediately. So please know that.
Copies of this.
Sure. So that do you want me to just leave these with you? You guys,
if you don't need them, that'd be great, because we have students that come and need that information.
Yeah, these are just good stress management things, and then there's the relationship ones.
I want to take one of each, because we have these people that come in our office a lot of times that we advise.
Thank you very much.
That's great.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you all. Good luck getting through the semester.
Don't trip over this.
Okay.
Any other questions for anyone? Do you have any more questions?
It's fine, you do.
Anybody?
So more specific, when do we get like more specific, like if I'm going to get a loan, if what kind of loan would be, if I'm going to get scholarships?
Right now, the scholarships, they're awarding scholarships. It'll be probably by the middle of June that they'll have all of the scholarships awarded. For the financial aid programs, usually once we have all of your forms in, it's about 6 weeks before you can see any awards. You can check your portal. So you want, what you want to do is go to your TW portal account and make sure that we're not requesting any additional documentation from you. And then, like I said, once we receive all of your forms, you can start checking your portal probably in about 6 weeks from the time you turn all those in. And that's where you'll see your awards first. We send an award letter out, but it usually comes out a couple of weeks after the award's made, but it'll show up on the portal as soon as we make it.
So can I talk to somebody who will pull up my status and see?
You can go to the financial aid office. I was trying to think, usually first thing in the morning, it's not quite as busy. It'll get progressively busier. I pulled some numbers this morning on applications, and we're getting close to 10% ahead of the number of applications for the same time this year as what we had last year. And I know you can hear on the news and the paper, and nationwide there's about 20% more that have applied for financial aid at the same time this year as what had last year. So that is going to be not an issue. Our biggest problem is trying to get everybody done in a timely fashion and with limited staffing. But right now, you should be able to go over there this afternoon without any problem. When you get closer to the start of Maymester, then it starts getting kind of crazy in there and continues on through the summer. So
one more question. I'm accepted at the Dallas campus.
Okay. Yeah, we do financial aid for Dallas, the TW Dallas campus. And on the Dallas campus, we do have a representative that handles admissions and registrar and financial aid over there. You can visit with her. Her name is Karen Longtrail. But we do all of the awarding out of the Denton office. If you have questions for her that she can't answer, she contacts one of us and we help her through that. She doesn't do generally any of the awarding over there, but she's very, very nice, very helpful. But what I want you to do before you leave is get this particular form. Okay. And let me give you one of these books while it's at it. We'll give you a little bit more information about financial aid, but just go ahead and fill that one out and get the documentation.
And can I fill this up and leave it today here? Or
well, if you've got your documentation attached to it, here, let me give you one of my cards and you can staple it all together and bring it by. And just ask them to give it to me and I'll get it to our director. Once you turn the special circumstance form in, which is what you have, depending on how many our director has on his desk, it can be about 4 to 6 weeks before he gets to him. He's got a stack, I think, about like that in there right now. So, any other questions? You had good questions.
Do you have, like especially when it's not as busy as mm-hmm. it is right now, but do you have any sort of like one-on-one financial aid
yes.
counseling sessions
mm-hmm.
we could like call and set an appointment for?
Yes, you can call and schedule an appointment. We have at least one counselor available. I won't say all the time, but the majority of the time to see students, and they're generally 20-minute appointment sessions where they can take a look at your information and kind of give you a general idea of what's going on. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Is there a special form that needs to be filled out for the SMART grant? Or do
you
No,
just your FAFSA. We look at any student who has completed, turns in a FAFSA and completes a financial aid file. We evaluate the student's eligibility for that particular grant program.
For the TEACH grant,
mm-hmm.
can that be retroactive? Because right now I'm biology, but I'm thinking I might get alternate teacher certification. Could it?
No, it's not. You have to be in an eligible program. And all of our information, financial aid information, is out on the website. And if you want to go to the financial aid homepage, it's just tw.edu, and you can click on the directory and go to the F's and financial aid. And then click on grants, and I think it's down the lower part of the
pages, scroll down to Teach Grant, and there's all the information out there. You have to have a certain GPA, which is another requirement, in addition to being in an eligible program. If you read that information and you think you're in an eligible program, you can get a copy of the application, and this would apply for the current year as well for 08-09, and take it to the College Professional Education. They'll certify it, send it to us, and then we'll determine if you meet all of the other eligibility requirements for it. Yes, ma'am.
I came in late, so you might have already answered this, but
that's okay.
How do you qualify for work study?
Work study, you have to have what we call financial need. And usually what happens during the awarding year, we run out of money in that particular program. But if you locate a job on campus that does require work study, you can come to the financial aid office and we can take a look at it and see maybe you have some remaining eligibility for some financial aid and you could qualify for the work study, and then we can go in and add that program. Normally when you fill out the TWU certification and information form, our application, if you indicate on there that you prefer work study over student loans, when we do the initial award, we would award you an amount for work study. Now, that doesn't mean you can get that money. That means that you're eligible to locate a work study job on campus, and as long as you work the required hours or you're working, you can earn up to that amount. So most of the work study jobs pay minimum wage, but there are some that pay more than that. And normally the jobs are like 15 to 20 hours a week. We have about 15 student assistants in our office, and I think all of them, maybe all but one, are on work study.
Okay.
And when do we find out if we got work study?
When you receive your financial aid award, or when you can look on your portal and see.
Because my loan is up there right now. That might be from my FAFSA. But I'm wondering if anything else is going to come up.
If the loan was just recently put out there,
yeah.
Then either you didn't qualify for work study or they didn't award it, you can stop by the front desk and ask them to take a look at it to see if you would qualify for work study. If it's a case where you still have remaining eligibility, we could add it for you. Other questions? Well, thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you and try to give you some information that hopefully will be helpful to you and create a lower stress level for you. I know we can't take stress totally away, but maybe it'll let you have a little bit less stress in your life.
Thank you.